Last night, I went to watch my granddaughter show her horse. And in the arena, all the dust and stuff was stirred up. And I've been sounding like this all day. So you have to excuse my voice. I'll do the best I can here. So this term, imprisoned splendor, was first coined by Robert Browning. He was a poet, an English poet. He lived from 1812 to 1889. And he used this term in a poem called Paracelsus. And it goes like this. Truth is within us, ourselves. It takes no rise from outward things, whatever you may believe. There is an inmost center in us all, where truth abides in fullness. And all around, wall upon wall, the gross flesh hems it in, this perfect, clear perception, which we call truth. A baffling and perverting carnal mesh binds it and makes all error. And to know, know in all capital letters, to know rather consists in opening out a way whence the imprisoned splendor may escape, then reflecting entry for a light supposed to be without. Now this, I'm intrigued by the last two lines before, it seems like, to me anyway, that he's saying a light or an energy to come to us from without is alternative facts. For the light is already within us. It's already our imprisoned splendor is already within us. It's referring to our divine essence, imprisoned within a body. It's that Christ within us, that self that we share in unity. It's the altar to our Creator that is at the center of ourselves. For deep down, our essence is love. It sometimes, sometimes seems like the spiritual journey is a constant search for what's wrong with us, doesn't it? We keep looking for things that we can weed out of our personality or our lives. And if we put our focus on what's right with us, and count our blessings, we are more apt to be more aware of our divinity. Matthew Fox says that our imprisoned splendor is our original blessing, not original sin. So we are all on this journey together, and we are one in spirit. Now I have to confess, for a long time, I did not really understand the meaning of the concept of oneness. It seemed to me like it was an airy-fairy kind of thing that people talk about and they assume you know what it is. And it took me a while to come to an understanding, really, of what oneness is. In my understanding, each one of us has that divine essence that we call our higher self. And this divine essence is our connection with the divine, with spirit, with God, whatever you want to call it. And we are all connected to the same source, so that we're all a manifestation of that spirit, that source. And each one of us is expressing in a unique way. And it's the unique way that we show up in the world that contributes to this feeling that we're separate. Because we are different in appearance, we're different in the way we express and the way we live our lives. So it does seem like we're separate, but our divine essence, our inner splendor, our imprisoned splendor, is not overtly visible. What you see is all the false things. We're like one cell in our body, this for example. If that one cell becomes healthier, the rest of the body is on its way to better health. And we're the same way. As we become healthier, as we become more spiritually aware, we're helping the whole universe to expand. As we become more connected to spirit, the whole organism, the living, breathing, spiritual entity of humankind expands. And there's another way to think about this imprisoned splendor, and this is the idea of the self-imposed prisons that we create for ourselves with our thoughts, beliefs, and choices. We would be wise to examine our lives in terms of what imprisons us, including our attitudes as well as our circumstances. So it's a Greek Socrates who said, "The unexamined life is not worth living." So let's look at some ways that we may have imprisoned our splendor. And if number one, if you are spending 8 or more hours a day at a job that is boring or frustrating or filled with tension, and one that provides very little personal satisfaction, this might feel like a prison to you. And you might be daydreaming about the day you can retire, or perhaps that you could be self-employed. But you know that comes with its own set of frustrations and hurdles and restrictions as well. But if you're not doing something that you love to do, that brings you joy and satisfaction, as well as income, you might be in a self-imposed prison. Another example is in a relationship. If you're in a relationship that is constricting, in a relationship where you can't be yourself or you can't express yourself, or perhaps there's an imbalance of power in that relationship, you might feel like you're in a prison. And you may have gotten into this situation or remain in this situation for the security that it provides. But I can tell you, it's a false security. When we look to someone else to take care of us or provide for our security, it relieves us of having to take responsibility for our own lives. Our self-esteem will grow if we make responsible choices and good decisions and engage in meaningful activities, meaningful for us, and work towards achieving goals, personal goals. When we hitch our wagon to another person and focus on that relationship, it puts our hold or our growth in a holding pattern. And it'll eventually feel like a prison. Another example, you may have found that you've gotten yourself into debt that restricts the flow of your finances. Credit is so readily available, and it's so easy to get sucked into buying things that are not vital or necessary for your life. And when a large portion of your income is already spent, it severely limits what you can do. So getting out of debt prison can be extremely freeing. Now, I have to admit, I have been in all three of these prisons, self-imposed prisons, over the years. And so I know what I'm talking about here. There are a couple of other ones that I thought about. Your home can even be a prison. If it restricts you, if you have to spend all your time and all your money on upkeep and yard work and et cetera, and you aren't free to go do the fun things that you'd like to do, it can seem like a prison. And then some people may even think of their body as a prison if they have physical limitations. The Course of Love asks this question: if you continue to think of your body as a prison, or your environment, your mind, or your time as a prison, how can it exist in perfect harmony with the universe? Think about that. If you want to have a life of purpose and meaning, you have to live as you're called to live. You have to be your own authority in life. Again, the Course of Love says, until you are living and being who you really are and doing what you love, you are in a self-imposed prison. So what's the secret to living your best life? I believe it begins with cultivating that awareness and that relationship with the divine within us. And it calls for examining our own lives to find the places where we are restricted and to open ourselves up to greater good. We can ask Spirit to guide us, to show us how to get out of this prison. When we seek a connection with our source in meditation or in quiet contemplation, we begin to see ourselves as children of the Most High. And when we can see it in ourselves, we'll be able to see it in others as well. We become aware of our oneness in our interactions with others when we can look beyond appearances, and see the truth of who we all are. And as we grow in our spiritual awareness and understanding, our sense of oneness grows as well. Another practice that is helpful is to simply focus on the good, the beautiful, the abundant, and the blessings of life. And this helps us to resonate with that place within us where the divine resides. When your heart is in the right place, there's a capacity to spread the fragrance of oneness. I like that term, the fragrance of oneness, to share the light of our being and to experience the release of our imprisoned splendor out into the world. So thank you very much. I'll see you.